Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Ward Hannigan. Ward is a full-time foreclosure specialist and trainer located in San Diego County. He brings you over 30 years of real estate experience with a degree in economics and a doctorate in law. He has worked in California's foreclosure market exclusively since 1982. And as a consequence, he has extensive experience finding cash, researching title, handling evictions, rehabbing, reselling, working as a foreclosure consultant for lenders, handling their REO turnarounds and rollovers. And as a one-on-one trainer and mentor, he's trained some of the most successful foreclosure practitioners in the Western United States. Ward, welcome back.
Thank you.
So Jack Fullerton has twisted your arm, and you are
right
reluctantly in front of an audience as a trainer.
Right. He was trying to twist my arm, and I was in San Diego, and I was told he had rocks for brains if he wanted me as a speaker. If he ever wants his club to keep going on, I'm the last person to get to talk. And he said, Ward, he says, is better than nothing. I've never heard anybody tell me that I'm better than nothing before. And so, anyways, he said, please, please, please. So I said, okay, I'll come up and do it. But don't hold me responsible later on when people are, you know, out, you know, on a bat in the parking lot or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, I get intrigued about how, if I'm going to talk, okay, what would I talk about, and how would I structure it, da 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 da. And that was kind of fun. So I love when I'm at a meeting, I love to get a handout. I don't know why, just to take something home, and most people speak, and they don't have a handout. And so it's kind of like if, you know, you hope you can remember his points and this and that, 3 weeks from now or a month from now. But if he gave you a handout, then a month from now, you just go read his handout. So I made a handout, and so I gave a talk, about 22 guys at the time for his club. And and this is, by the way, about 3 years after I got into business, so I did have some credentials to talk about foreclosure. I gave this talk, and it was very comfortable for me because it was only, you know, 20 guys and stuff like that. When I was finished, I was startled because everybody stood up and clapped. I was so, and I knew all the stuff that I intended to talk about, and I didn't get in, so I knew how crappy the talk was because, gee, I only talked about maybe 50% of what I really wanted to or something like that because I didn't gauge how much time I was going to. Anyways, it made the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
Okay.
It absolutely did. I just, whoa, it was like a wave came over me. And then there was a guy in the audience who was a program coordinator for ACRE, which is Area Congress and Real Estate up in Orange County at the time, and he came to me. And it was after a seminar class for Jack, who is it? No, Bob, can't think of the guy's last name. Big famous speaker at that time, Bob and Al Lowry. Al Lowry and Bob, whatever. And so the people who'd taken those classes got together and decided to have a monthly club and then hire outside speakers to come in, and on and on. And he says to me, he says, Ward, he says, God, it was fantastic. Could you speak for us about in a week, not a week, but about 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now? I said, what? Really? I thought I was going to go back to San Diego in oblivion, you know, or something, and this guy wants me to speak. And I said, well, I'm just going to do the same thing I just did with Jack here. He said, that's fine. And I said, well, I have a handout. And I brought my master's up with me because I didn't know if if Jack was going to need more than I brought. I brought up about 25, and I was going to give him the master's if he needed more. So I said, well, here's the master's. Make up as many as you want. I said, now, look, come on over here. I want to tell you something. He asked me, he says, what's your fee? What? And I said, well, and I always remember when I had jobs when I was growing up, and the employment applications asked me, you know, what was your expected, what were you looking for to get paid?
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew what to say, so I always would put the going rate. And so that flashed in my mind, and I just said, the going rate. And he looked so crestfallen, he says, oh, no. No, and I said, what's the matter? He said, we don't have that much money in a budget. And then I learned something else that it was from IBM, and I said, well, how close to it can you get?
To whatever the going rate is, huh?
Yeah, so he says something like, I don't know, $200 or something. I said, okay, I'll tell you what. If you promise me you'll never, ever, ever, ever tell anybody that I spoke so for such a small amount of money, I'll do it. And I said, and by the way, I fall asleep at night, and either I'm going to kill myself or I'm going to kill somebody else if I get on the road at night. I'm really a danger. I just, bam, fall asleep. So you're going to have to find me a little room, or he says it's a hotel. I said, fine, don't get me fancy, nothing. You know, I'll sleep next to the elevator. It doesn't matter because I'm a sound sleeper. So, but that's got to be part of the deal. And so that's what it is.
That's
and I went
you...
there, the acre, there was 200 and some odd people there instead of 20.
Whoa, okay.
And, yeah, and I was a fish out of water. And so, but I learned, I was standing, I had this lectern. You had in those days microphones that weren't portable, so I was anchored by this microphone. And I'm up on the lectern sitting on a podium. So I'm up about, kind of like your talk, you know, up about 2 or 3 feet high, something like that.
Right.
And I felt so distant from this group of people and awkward, and I felt stilted. And so I just impetuously jumped down on the actual main floor, and the hell of the microphone, I just I talked a lot louder and projected my voice. And I didn't notice there was 200 people because all I could see was the ones who were directly in front of me, and I went up and down the aisles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was just as comfortable as when I was with Jack. And again, I got people mobbing me afterwards. Want my card? Card? What am I going to do? You know, scrape your plate with it or something? What do you want my card for? Because at that time, I was not training anybody.
That's a great story. You've trained a lot of people. What do successful trustee sale buyers have in common?
They have, it has to be desperation. All right?
Okay.
No, I'm not kidding you. When guys come and take my training, if they come down and they're in a Lexus or a Mercedes or some fancy car, I say, they're not hurting bad enough. They're not desperate enough. And brains, it doesn't matter. Brains, you got this thing that I can be anything I want in my life. I can fly to the moon. I can, you know, cut open people's chests. I can do whatever I want during certain, you know. So that doesn't do it. It basically is that they can hear the roar of the waterfalls. And then, whoa, you know, they desperately got to do something.
Okay. Yeah. That's the best starting point, huh? Somebody walks.
Absolutely.
Somebody walks to your training. You go, okay, we've got our next hero here. What?
Yeah.
Okay, if you feel that way, then okay. What's been the toughest challenge that you've ever faced in the business?
My toughest challenge is when I got started in 1976, getting interested in foreclosures because I had. The way I sold a lot of apartment houses, which is the way I got started in real estate, is I convinced the seller to carry back owner financing. And sometimes the owner financing, 2 or 3 years later, was falling apart because the market was falling apart or something. And a guy would call me up and, Ward, man, you fucked me into taking back a third on that property and an all-inclusive and nobody's paying me. And, you know, what do I do? Well, foreclose. what's that? So I had to start explaining that stuff. So I was going to law school at the time, and in the evening, so I went to the law library and started researching, you know, how foreclosures work and what you have to do and all that kind of stuff, and it piqued my interest. And so I tried on the side to thinking I could do foreclosures on the side. No way, Jose. No way. And you know what you have? You have people have a job. If they're making a lot of money at, when I was making a lot of money for buying and selling apartment houses, even if you hate it, you don't want to give it up because it's cash, you know. And so if some siren on the other side over here is trying to blow in your ear about some fantastic opportunity over there, you're very reluctant because, you know, you need money for your monthly nut. And there's no guarantee that it's going to work out as fine for me as it is for somebody else, you mm-hmm. know. And I diddled around with it, and nothing happened. You know, you diddle around with anything, and nothing will happen. And 2 years later, I forgot about that. I mean, what I did in 76 was I subscribed to a foreclosure notice service. And that's in the days when you got big, fat envelopes. And what it is, after 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I had unopened fat envelopes all over my desk, mm-hmm. you know.
Right.
And I was embarrassed, so I just threw them all away. You know, I didn't even open them up.
Yeah, you're hopelessly behind, right? You couldn't open them.
Absolutely. So then I had amnesia 2 years later, and I did the same thing all over again. Because like when I called up, the guy who had the service had sold it, and a new guy really had a hot story. Well, man, his service is different, and I got my stepson's a genius. He's a computer maven, and so we can do things and yada yada yada. And so I'm betting on him, you know, instead of we got to bet on yourself. Because I was betting that he's going to make me rich in foreclosures. Well, if he could do that, what the hell is he just doing with a little foreclosure notice service?
Right. Yeah.
So I fell for it, and I really got upset with Ward Hannigan because it didn't take me more than about 3 or 4 days, and I started having a stack of envelopes again. I said, you cannot do this business. It's a tremendous taskmaster if you don't give it full time. And right now I'm not willing to give it full time and give up the money that I'm making in apartment sales. And so in 82 came, that's 4 years later, all of a sudden my world disappeared, because when you got mortgage interest rates going up to, you know, 18%, and you got a property that's not necessary to own like a home is, you know, this is just an investment. We can always postpone, you know, buying that investment till the market turns around and becomes more conducive to making money.
Right.
And so the market just went, it disappeared. But fortunately, because of my early upbringing, I'm quite a saver. I save money like you can't believe, and it just piles up. I call it dust balls. And I could last. But after about 4, 5, 6 months went by, I go, Jesus, things not being going away soon. So I think, foreclosures. I got all the time in the world.
We can open all those envelopes.
I jumped in it and never looked back. Never looked back.
When you started, there were very few participants, information, yeah. Pretty tough to access. And how's the game changed since then?
Well, it hasn't. These guys were the ones that knew the business were not about to share anything, not even the time of day, with the newbie that shows up on the courthouse steps. And they ignore you, they try to put you down, they just, you know, it's just the cold shoulder in extreme. And so I could care less. I mean, I was desperate. I had nothing, and money was going out on my savings account with a big whoosh sound,
mm-hmm.
and so it didn't matter. But I can be a ferocious competitor, and I was. And so I'm not going away. You have to stick that in your pipe and smoke it or something.
when today, I mean, in Riverside County, you know, we went from having probably half a dozen regulars to, I don't know, 60 or 80 during the last cycle. So it's, you know, it's a lot of participation has occurred because of a lot more ease of access to the information.
Exactly. And it's permanently changed. And so, you know, you gotta be realistic. And so I think that you have to go through three entirely different things in your lifetime as far as making money is concerned. You know, a bus driver one time, and then all of a sudden you now own a motel, and the next time it's something else. But you constantly are going to be searching to keep making money and do it to where you're not life is unbearable because you can only, you know, dig ditches. So you know, I just from 06, I got out. This is I went a whole year. I don't know if I told you the story, but I went down to the courthouse steps with anywhere from a quarter of a million to a half $1 million in cashier's checks on me, 5 days a week for an entire year.
Mm.
And I would come back empty-handed, and I'm fuming at the nonsense prices these guys paid, and I would say to my poor wife, take a guess today, how high they bid. I don't want to guess. Come on, you know. And no, guess. And so she probably guessed. I said, no, they only did this, you know. And so I got to the point where I crossed over the line of persistence to obstinance. And it just became very clear to me about a year of doing that, hey, I don't have to put up with this crap. I got a brain. I can do something else, you know. And or something that's related to it. Got my trainings and all that kind of stuff. And I took some money. I told my wife that when it was booming, the market was absolutely booming. And so I love fixing houses up, but other people's, you know, idea of a house. And now I found a lot. There was a super discount. I was going to just flip it.
Mm-hmm.
and double my money. And I got and when you sell lots, you have to have a story go with it because people can't imagine what to do with this raw land. You got to paint them a picture. So I was doing that, and I got more and more enamored with this idea of instead of just flipping the house, it's had a killer view. I want to build a house. And so I told my wife, honey, why don't we take the dormant money that we got in the bank, you know, a little over $1 million, and take it and build a house. And it's not something we're going to move into. This is, you know, flipping. And I said, is that all right with you? She said, yeah. She says, it gets you out of the house. So I built it. I put it cost me $900,000 in total.
Okay.
And took me close to 2 years because they didn't know what the hell I was doing. It's the first house I ever built. And I sold it for $1.5 million. I made $600,000 on that house. So needless to say, yes, my wife and I took a nice trip to Europe.
Now, what year was this that you sold it?
It was in 04. Excuse me. I said 08, but it was in 04.
Okay.
So I got started in it in 2002.
That's pretty good timing.
Yes. Yes. That's great.
Now, I can't leave this segment without talking about the Ding Bat rental program because it defies every other rental philosophy in history. So what's your favorite rental and why?
All right. So before I forget, to the people out there that would like to read about it, you can go to my website, foreclosureforum.com, go down the yellow column on the left-hand side, and there's a link that says the Ding Bat Retirement Plan. And I stumbled into this. Now, there's nothing that I've ever read, even to this day, of other people doing this in this little niche. But I think I got, when I sold some property, I got in an exchange some major property and a tiny little dinky old house with a tenant in it that was as tiny as and dinky as the house, you know. And, oh, man. But okay, if that's what it takes to do the deal. And I absolutely forgot about it in the hurly-burly of making money. And, you know, a couple years later, I go, Jesus, I still got that house, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking at it. But a dingbat, to answer your question, is a house, a standalone house. Important that does not have a common a surface with any other property. Nobody living above, on the side, down below, anywhere. It's got to be a single, freestanding, one-bedroom, one-bath house. And you can put the world's greatest tenant in there. What's the world's greatest tenant? The one that pays the rent every single month, guaranteed. And that's the market rent, okay, mm-hmm. for 15, 16 years before they go out. Okay.
When you say so they go out. This,
well, quite literally. But so what you want is you want a retiree. And I like to get a retiree that's now it's in the boomer generation. So 65 years, from 65 to right around 75. On Section 8. So Section 8 is a federal government program which is started with Nixon in the 60s, and that's where they pay a subsidy to low-income people to help them make the rent payments. And basically the subsidy amounts to about 80 to 90% of the rent, and the tenant contributes the other 10 to 20%. And if they don't contribute the 10 to 20%, Section 8 kicks them off the program, and the waiting list to get on Section 8 for freebie rent in San Diego right now is 11 years. So they would have to then go to the back of the line for 11 years to pay their own rent. So I never have ever had a tenant ever be even late with their portion of the rent.
And is the typical occupant a single senior?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You want a single person because that's the safest. If you have two people or more living together, then you have 2 to 3 times the disruption that's going to lead to a vacancy. You have them die, or you have them get divorced, or end up missing, or whatever happens. they lose a job. And all those disruptions in modern life are the reasons why you have vacancies. And I'm very familiar with vacancies because for 10 years I ran apartment houses.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the bane of my existence. And so I love dingbats.
In the last minute, what would be the amenities that are important in a dingbat rental?
It's got to be on a residential property, not out in the boonies, got a sidewalk. Public transportation within 6 blocks or so. It's got to be, just like a normal house. It's got to be watertight and not be exposed to the elements more than any other house.
Air conditioning?
In Arizona, yes, but not in San Diego.
Okay.
And but I don't provide refrigerators. I don't provide garbage disposals. I do provide a stove hood.
Kind of structured for disabled at all?
No.
Okay.
But I do put in disabled people. I know it's going to sound terrible, especially if the listener is disabled, but they beat the hell out of my property. They get the wheelchair and ram into things and walls and all that kind of stuff. And these older houses, they're about 100 years old, weren't built for ADA compliance either.
Right.
So not going to make a disabled person happy.
Okay.
But,
Ward, we're out of time.
I don't have any more carpets.
Okay. We're out of time. It's been a lot of fun. I knew it would be. Ward Hannigan, foreclosureforum.com, a man that's got a reputation I've never heard anybody say anything bad about. So, Ward, looking forward to seeing you soon.
You betcha. I'm glad to do it. And I had as much fun as you had.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.